What happens if income taxes decrease, but taxpayers don't really notice? In New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson in for David Brancaccio. The Republican tax cuts have been showing up in companies' quarterly earnings statements, and the nonpartisan Tax Policy Center estimates that 80% of Americans will get a tax cut too. But many aren't feeling it. In a new Marketplace Edison research poll, more than half of respondents said the new tax law hasn't had an impact on them personally. Marketplace's Marielle Segarra reports.
You could say Karen Schindler noticed when the tax law went into effect this year.
Because I was sort of joking with my mom about, oh, I got a raise.
A raise of about 10 bucks a week. Schindler is a sales manager for a furniture company in Florida. She makes 65 grand a year.
So it wasn't a huge increase.
In fact, it was so small that Schindler told our poll she hadn't seen a pay bump at all. Prajesh Kandaskar, who lives in Houston, says the tax cut added about 40 bucks a week to his paycheck. That didn't make much of an impression, given his well-paying job as a civil engineer.
It was not something where, you know, it was kind of like a big change in your financial situation.
He didn't expect it to be. 42% of the people in our poll said they don't understand how the tax law affects them. But Kandaskar was pretty clear.
I kind of knew, like, the law was more for big corporations to get the big tax cuts.
That perception is one reason the Republican National Committee admitted recently it had, quote, lost the messaging battle on the tax cuts. And as the midterms approach, very few ads for GOP candidates even mention the tax law. But William McInnes doesn't need all that. He has 45 extra dollars in his paycheck every couple weeks. McInnes works at a wastewater treatment plant in Nevada. He says he's using the money to pay off his credit card.
It's nice. I could pay off some debts a little faster. It takes, you know, time, but every little bit helps.
McInnes says he's been a Republican for a long time, but he'd been thinking about switching to independent. Then came the new tax law.
Since then, I've decided to stick with him a little longer.
There's one return on the GOP tax cut. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
Reforms passed after the financial crisis created a category of systemically important financial institutions, or SIFIs. They were subject to higher regulatory requirements, the idea being these firms needed special oversight because they were so big, so important to the broader U.S. economy. It wasn't just for big banks. MetLife, AIG, General Electric, and Prudential Financial carried the label as well. In the last 2 years, all but Prudential shed the designation. Today, we learn Prudential can as well. Susan Smith is head of U.S. equities at Aviva Investors.
It reduces the regulatory compliance that Prudential has to conform to. And so Prudential itself will be saving quite literally hundreds of millions of dollars in changing its reporting structure.
And so what does it mean that these institutions don't carry this label anymore?
What it does mean is that they're going to be able to focus on their businesses and keep going. The regulatory bodies did a little bit of overreaching in our crisis and in the recovery. And we had so much regulatory oversight that we saw some suppression and inability to actually conduct business because the regulated institutions were busy focused on satisfying the requirements of the government. We've heard the same thing from a lot of banks. So now we're shifting back. These institutions are still very important, but we stuck bank regulations on them that weren't particularly relevant or as relevant for them, and now we're removing those.
Okay, Susan Schmidt with Aviva Investors, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We spend a lot of time these days thinking about, talking about the movement of people and goods across borders. But the flow of data across borders is also a really big deal. This week, new rules went into effect in India, requiring all payment data for purchases in the country to be stored in India alone. Visa, MasterCard, Amex, Amazon, PayPal, they all say they need more time to get this set up. Here to discuss is the BBC's Samir Hashmi in Mumbai. Hey.
Hi there.
So, Samir, why does India want all this data stored physically in India?
This is a policy that the Indian government wants to follow because they believe that in the long term, storing data in India will not only benefit the economy, but also from a security, national security point of view, they think it's important.
And it benefits the Indian economy how?
They think that if infrastructure is created within the country, a common pool is created in the country, in the long term, it will bring down the cost of storing data in the country, which in turn will benefit them economically.
And we've heard from these payment companies that they're not ready, and so they're facing fines. What types of fines could they have to pay?
There's no confirmation whether they've been fined till now or not. The Indian Central Bank had issued a deadline of October 15th. However, what we have understood is that the Reserve Bank of India, which is India's central bank, has still not started penalizing these companies and may be willing to give them some more time to comply with this order. So at this stage, there are no reports of any penalties.
Do you have any sense on how this might all resolve?
There's no clarity at this stage how it may resolve, but the Indian government and the Reserve Bank do not want to budge on the policy or make any concessions, despite requests from a lot of American companies as well as lobby groups. Now, the big question is whether the international companies will finally agree and comply, or will they continue putting pressure on the Indian government? That is the thing that will be interesting to see in the next few days.
All right, Samir Hashmi with the BBC in Mumbai. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm Tracy Samuelson, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.